Welcome to the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everyone, to the third and final hour of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday, July 16th, and as I've said a number of times tonight, I'm broadcasting to you tonight from Hot Springs, Arkansas, on vacation with my wife and daughter, and broadcasting the show, if you can believe it, from my hotel room. And that is how far radio has come. I'm calling in tonight to our flagship station in Memphis, AM 1380 WLRM Radio. Thanks goes out to the staff, crew, and producers there at 1380 for making this happen. And of course, the staff and crew at our network in Utah, Liberty News Radio, and all of them working together with me from afar to make tonight's show possible as we go out to the AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network and online at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. Looking outside my window tonight, I have a breathtaking view of the Ozark Mountains and down below Lake Hamilton here in Hot Springs. I want to thank Keith Alexander for his contributions to the program tonight, and of course, Bill Rowland, who always does such a great job. And it goes without saying, thanks goes to our featured guest for the evening, Alana Mercer, and her new book, of course, the book she was on to promote, Into the Cannibal's Pot. Folks, if you missed the second hour of tonight's show, I encourage you to revisit it in the archives. It's going to be one of those shows that a lot of people are talking about after tonight. And thanks again to Bill and our guest for bringing that one to the airwaves this evening. Yeah, she was, of course, talking about South Africa, what's happened there, how it's fallen, and how it probably will be a precursor to what happens here in America if we don't stop the insanity. Well, I'm not going to talk more about that this hour. We spent an hour doing that, but one of the articles that I featured at thepoliticalcesspool.org this week, and as I say, you know, this show continues to get more and more popular, and we continue to attract a larger and larger audience, and of course that trickles over to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. We continue to break records. We continue to get new visitors and new readers and listeners, and of course a lot of that is because, you know, we put a lot of good content on there. In fact, a lot of the material that you hear us discussing on the show each Saturday night is plucked right from our website at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But there, every day, we update you with two or three different news stories of interest to you. So even when we're not on the air on Saturday night, you can go to the Political Cesspool 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and get updated information, a variety of information, interesting stuff that's going to be hushed up or distorted everywhere else. And then talking about South Africa in the second hour, I got a story up there at the website this week about South Sudan. South Sudan has become the world's newest nation. Just last week it did. And that's, in fact, the story from, I believe it was the BBC, South Sudan has become the world's newest nation, its neighbor to the north being the first to officially recognize the new country. South Sudan has been wrought by decades of conflict between the regions until the 2005 peace deal raised the prospect of independence. But while the new nation is oil-rich and optimistic, it is one of the least developed in the world. You know, another thing that we're doing over the course of the last couple of months is we continue to improve our website and improve our broadcast. We're always looking for ways to improve our work here. And one of the things we've been doing on the website is adding pictures and, when we can, video to complement the stories themselves, to give you a little extra, you know, resource there. And here we've provided a video of the South Sudanese celebrating their newfound independence. And you can find in this video the local citizenry, many with spears and war paint, celebrating in that video. And that is what South Africa is devolving into. And unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, that is what America is devolving into. And if you don't think it'll ever get that bad here, you're fooling yourself. so many other stories. I don't even know where to go here. We've got so many stories on the website and so little time this hour to cover them. Michael Jordan, let's talk about him for a second. I mean, this is really bouncing from one place to the other. You know, obviously he's one of the most celebrated and well-paid professional athletes of all time. He's currently the owner of the NBA's franchise in Charlotte. Now, this just goes to show, you know, you've got these, you know, South Sudanese in spears and war paint. Are they really that far removed from the black celebrities here in America? You know, Jordan doesn't seem to have a fifth grader's comprehension of spelling and grammar. He owns an NBA franchise in Charlotte. He's one of the most, as I said, identifiable black celebrities in the world. And he went to the University of North Carolina on a full scholarship before he went on to NBA fame. He didn't even have a fifth grader's comprehension of spelling and grammar. You can go and read the evidence we have of that at thepoliticalcesspool.org tonight. But, you know, as illiterate as Jordan may have been, you know, he wasn't nearly as dumb as one of his former colleagues, Antoine Walker, who played in the NBA as well, who newspapers are calling a one-man financial meltdown. And get this, according to multiple reports, Antoine Walker earned $108 million in NBA salaries in 13 years. He now lists $4.3 million in assets and $12.7 million in liabilities. He's bankrupt. He's 34 years old now. Okay, he made $108 million before he was 34 years old, and now he's $8 million in debt. He's trying to work menial jobs to repay $750,000 in debts that he owes to Las Vegas casinos. Now, how in the world do you earn $108 million in 13 years and then be $8 million in debt by the time you're 34? Keep in mind, keep this in mind too, NBA players were recently locked out by the league because they don't feel as though they are making enough. But these are the heroes of modern-day society, and these are the people that we should all emulate and strive to be like, sports heroes, sports stars, Michael Jordan, Antoine Walker. Two great examples there of news this week that we are reporting to you at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But we also have news there of, you know, significant matter, and we will get to some of that coming up right after this next commercial break. California, you know, Bill was talking about this, mentioned it in passing, I guess I should say, when we were interviewing Alana Mercer in the last hour. Associated Press reports that 13 so-called, and I'll put this in parentheses, conservative counties in California are looking into separating to form what would be the 51st state of South California. If the world can cheer South Sudan for claiming its independence from what was, you know, Sudan, just the Sudan, why couldn't this occur in South California? I have a hard time believing, though, that the media and America and the world will celebrate and cheer and send reporters to enthusiastically cover the thought of secession by white conservatives in California. But this is a story we are talking about, and we'll give you more information later this hour.
We'll be back right
also, Ron Paul messages. Retiring from Congress to after 20-something years to run for president and focus exclusively on his presidential campaign. More on that and much more right after these words. Stay tuned, everybody.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. As I told you just a few minutes ago, continue to get record-breaking traffic to our website as this program continues to grow and to expand. And one of the big ticket items on the website this week was an article that I posted about a new movie coming out called Django Unchained, another great movie coming out of Hollywood by director Quentin Tarantino, who, you know, despite his, you know, horrific subject matter, is a talented director for all intents and purposes. But we all know that Germans and white Southerners are the two types of people in the world who are hated above all others, and hated especially by Hollywood. A couple of years ago, the aforementioned director Quentin Tarantino made a movie, I guess you would pronounce it Inglourious Basterds, B-A-S-T-E-R-D-S. I don't know what that's supposed to spell, but that's the word. The film was set in World War II France and featured the statistic butchering of scores of Germans by a character named the Bear Jew and his friends, and the Bear Jew was played by actor Eli Roth. The climactic scene of the film shows a theater full of Germans burning alive. Inglourious Basterds, if you will, was nominated for 8 Academy Awards in 2009, winning one. Interestingly enough, Eli Roth, who played the character I just mentioned, publicly denounced our radio program for having Hutton Gibson on. You know, he didn't like the fact that we had Mel Gibson's dad on, and so he said a lot of nasty things about Hutton and our show. So it's not every day that you get denounced by an actor who played a feature role in a Oscar-winning film, but his comments can be documented on our website. Anyway, Inglourious Basterds gave the Germans their comeuppance from Hollywood, so now it's time for the white Southerners to get theirs. So another great movie from Quentin Tarantino coming soon to a theater near you. It's called Django Unchained, and it's about a slave-turned-bounty hunter who sets out to rescue his wife from the evil Calvin Candy, a Mississippi plantation owner who seeks to put Django in chains once more. Filming begins this fall, and the release date has been set for Christmas 2012. Nothing, no better way to celebrate Christmas than watching a bunch of Confederates get butchered. It stars Leonardo DiCaprio as the evil plantation owner and Jamie Foxx as the righteous slave Django. And one can only assume that Django is going to enjoy killing Southerners as much as Eli Roth enjoyed killing Germans. Inglourious Basterds, it's being produced by the Weinstein Company, which leads me to ask, Walt Disney, where are you? But, you know, this is just the latest manifestation of Hollywood's hatred for the South. I actually also linked up to a very, very good article that was published by Occidental Dissent, and I'll read just the part pertaining to the South from that. Just so many big movies have featured the Southerners in an evil role, and as this article reads, of all the white groups that Hollywood dislikes, it's clear that white Southerners have long held a special place in their heart. We've always been one of their favorite targets for demonization. In A Time to Kill, Matthew McConaughey, Sandra Bullock, and Samuel L. Jackson star in a film about the fictional gang rape of a 10-year-old black girl by white supremacists in Mississippi. I can guarantee you in the history of Mississippi that the plot of that movie has never played out in real life. The inverse of that, unfortunately, plays out quite often. In Mississippi Burning, another movie, William Dafoe and Gene Hackman play heroic federal agents from the Justice Department who descend on Mississippi to fight hate and racism. And, of course, every white person in that movie is evil and bad. Cold Mountain, 2003, Jude Law and Nicole Kidman star in a film that demonized the Confederate Home Guard. In Glory, Matthew Broderick led Denzel Washington and Morgan Freeman in the 54th Massachusetts Volunteer Infantry during the Civil War, where the Confederates killed Broderick and Washington and buried them together in a mass grave. Gods and Generals, you know, that's one of the few, as this story writes, and of course we recently offered Gods and Generals as a incentive to those of you who contributed to our most recent fundraising drive, and those movies and those books to those of you who contributed at the appropriate levels will be mailed next week. But Gods and Generals, of all the movies about the South, stands virtually alone among films as it depicts the Confederacy in a positive light and rightly casts Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson as heroes. But compare the treatment of Gods and Generals and the Passion of the Christ to the cooing over Brokeback Mountain, which was about gay cowboys in Wyoming, or The Blind Side, or Hancock, which was Will Smith's casting disaster as a superhero. It's only in hindsight that all of these films, which are seemingly unconnected, can be seen and interpreted in the light of a common pattern that reflects the anti-white, anti-Christian, anti-Southern zeitgeist of our age. We live in a world where someone like Morris Dees can make $304,000 a year, one of the highest salaries in Alabama. He's invited to speak at universities to lecture others about white privilege and people who live in trailer parks and support their families with food stamps. And, of course, Morris Dees is the white head of the so-called Southern Poverty Law Center, making $300,000 a year to lecture others about white privilege. Pretty ironic, to say the least. Meanwhile, Jared Taylor, our friend at American Renaissance, can't rent a hotel room in Charlotte, North Carolina, yet American academia is convinced that our society is so hobbled by white privilege and institutional racism that black people like Will Smith, Denzel Washington, Morgan Freeman, and Barack Obama cannot possibly succeed in such a racist environment. That leads us back to Django Unchained. In many ways, the Django Unchained, the story concludes, is the culmination of the American imagination, an anti-white Hollywood-produced racial revenge movie distributed by the Weinstein brothers, I won't even say it, and set in the American South, where a runaway slave becomes a bounty hunter who murders evil plantation owners. The racial situation in America has swung so far to the other side of the pendulum that Hollywood is now making racially inflammatory movies to cater to the bloodlust in an emerging market of anti-white racial snuff films. Needless to say, if the roles were reversed, the American left and the SPLC would be screaming bloody murder about racism and hatred and stereotypes. But because everyone knows that Germans and white Southerners are at the bottom of the racial totem pole, you can get away with making a movie about murdering white Southerners or Germans as Germans and make yourself a huge fortune off of it. There isn't a racial double standard here. It is a single standard that blacks and Jews are noble beings and Southerners and Germans are savage beasts who occupy another rung of the racial ladder somewhere below them. And, you know, if you want to read the rest of that article, I encourage you to do so. It's an incredible piece. And we have it featured for you tonight at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And again, you know, compare the reactions of all those movies I just mentioned, A Time to Kill, Glory, what were some of the others? Mississippi Burning, Inglourious Bastards. You know, compare all the acclaim and accolades these anti-white movies got. And compare that to the reaction that a movie celebrating the life, I would say celebrating the life, but, you know, giving an accurate portrayal of the death, let's say, of Jesus Christ. Compare the reaction Mel Gibson gets in Hollywood. Compare the reaction that The Passion of the Christ, a great movie, a great Christian movie. Compare the venom and the spit and the bile that movie elicited. Compared, and that was just a movie about Jesus Christ. You know, what's the hate there? No hatred there at all. Yet they hated it. And compare that to the movies that I just mentioned and how much glory they garnered. We got to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back with more right after this.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
I had my phone on mute there, so I guess that's not going to work. Welcome back, everybody, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards, Saturday evening, July 16th. Want to remind you of a fact that I brought to your attention back in the first hour, and that is that we are partnering with the National Policy Institute to bring to you a live video feed of our broadcast in production each Saturday evening, beginning sometime in August. We hope the early part of August, but it's a work in progress right now. You'll remember Richard Spencer, who was our guest last week on the show, and of course, he was on to promote the National Policy Institute's conference that I'll be speaking at in September in Washington, D.C. Very big event. If you have not yet registered for that, we encourage you to do so right away, and you can do that at npiconferences.com. But nevertheless, in addition to that collaboration, I'll be working with Richard and the team at NPI to bring you a live studio video feed of TPC in action each Saturday night. So in addition to being able to listen to us on the radio airwaves, brought to you courtesy of the Liberty News Radio Network, you will now also be able to watch us on video courtesy of NPI. I tell you, it just doesn't get any better than that. The only drawback to that for us is we'll actually have to start dressing rather than showing up to work in our pajamas every Saturday night. But besides that, I think it's going to be a pretty cool thing, and we hope you enjoy it. Now, Rocky from my favorite state of Florida, other than my home state, of course, my adopted state of Florida, has been waiting patiently. Rocky, thanks for calling back in. How you doing tonight?
Just fine. How are you?
Pretty good.
Cool. Really quick thing. I know we have very little time left for the evening. Speaking of whether or not America is going to go the same route as Zimbabwe and all those countries, I'm not sure if you've heard of this story or not. This is a little while ago, about a year ago. There was, first off, this was in Detroit, so the location gives it away. But there was a member of the Detroit City School Board, I believe the president, and his name was Otis Mathis. And now he was illiterate, actually. He got his college degree in like 15 years, only after they waived the English requirements. But he was eventually forced to resign, not because he was illiterate, but because there was reports that he had pleasured himself in front of other female employees. Ever heard of that story?
No, but that doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, basically, he then said that he was a young man who didn't know any better, and he wanted his job back.
Yes. No, I did hear about this. Yeah, he was a young man and didn't know any better. What was he, like 50?
I think 56. That was his age. Yeah.
I did hear about that. Now that you brought up that little caveat, yes, I had heard that story. I knew it was from Detroit. I didn't know his name, but I knew that the young man, the 56-year-old young man from Detroit that had done that, but I didn't know he was a member of the city council, and I didn't know his name. But yes, I've heard that now. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'll be looking forward to being 30 years older down the road. I can still be a young man, you know?
Well, that's right. But I tell you, and that's if you're lucky you get away with something, you know, with that kind of manifestation of diversity. Speaking of city councils, I'm sure you saw on our website a couple of weeks ago, we documented the exploits of city councilmen in Dallas who just, you know, berates his constituents and he stands up. I mean, it's, you know, African style government in action, and it's all on video. And he's been rated, you know, for corruption by the FBI now, so I guess they're not going to be able to enjoy that manifestation of diversity in Dallas much longer. But this is, you know, you get stuff like this if you're lucky. If you're unlucky, you get far, far worse. You know, like the South Afrikaners have gotten, as our guest Alana Mercer brought to our attention during the second hour. Indeed. So if you're lucky, you get subjected to stuff like you mentioned, Rocky, and if you're unlucky, you get the South African treatment. And that's what's coming. We're worried about that. But thank you so much for the call. And, he talked about the illiteracy of this guy, and he was a member of the, city council and, you know, gotten a college degree and all this and couldn't even write. And I guess that was my point of contention in bringing up the Michael Jordan story. I mean, it's never funny if someone's illiterate. I mean, you know, that's not anything that it pleases me to see. But the fact of the matter in Jordan's case was that this guy, you know, got a full scholarship to the University of North Carolina, you know, a very, you know, prestigious school. How many deserving students applied to the University of North Carolina and got overlooked, and Jordan got the scholarship because he could play basketball, and he went to college, and couldn't, you know, string together three sentences. You know, there was something blatantly unfair about that, and that is why we bring some of these stories to your attention. But, you know, I'll tell you, this story coming out of California that I'm about to bring to your attention, this is something that probably even the Zulus wouldn't put up with. As the latest manifestations of the egalitarian movements continue to progress, they continue to follow that so-called civil rights blueprint to the letter. We posted a pretty good piece to our website a week or two ago. It was entitled Fools in Public Schools, about the recent horrors taking place in the public school systems. And in that, we documented about a half a dozen different stories of just craziness that's going on around the country in different public school systems. This one happens to come from California. A bill to require California public schools to teach the historical accomplishments of gay men and lesbians has passed the state legislature last Tuesday in what supporters call a first for the nation. So now school children are going to be subjected to homosexual indoctrination. As I reread this now, the accomplishments of so-called gay men and lesbians passed the state legislature. They're going to have to teach those historical accomplishments to kids. Governor Jerry Brown of California has not said publicly whether he will support the bill, which, you know, he will. He's a Democrat. You know he will. Even if he takes no action, the measure becomes law automatically if he doesn't veto it. California already requires public schools to teach the contributions made to society by women and by racial and ethnic groups that were historically discriminated against, such as blacks, Latinos, and Native Americans. These are the words of the story, of course, not mine. It's unfair to leave out or exclude an entire portion of our population from history, said Carolyn Laub, executive director of the San Francisco-based Gay and Straight Alliance Network. Let me reread her statement, because we know that it's mandated by the government that California public schools teach the contributions now of homosexuals, women, blacks, racial and ethnic groups that were, quote-unquote, discriminated against, Latinos, Native Americans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's unfair to leave out or exclude an entire portion of our population from history, except, of course, I guess, the accomplishments of straight white men. If you mention them, the only way you can talk about them is if you link whatever they did to evil and racism. And, you know, exactly what historical accomplishments have been handed down by the sodomites? I'm assuming that in order to fill a book about their history or their accomplishments, that the homosexual activists are just going to start making up that many historical figures were homosexual and count their achievement as their own. But again, you know, this so-called movement for civil rights, quote-unquote, for homosexuals, I mean, they're following that blueprint. And, you know, they want minority status. You know, people who are celebrating a perversion, they're celebrating a perversion and trying to take that perversion and turn it into an ethnic group. You know, they want minority status. They want all of the goodies and set-asides and affirmative action treatments that racial minorities get. They think that because they're homosexual that they are a minority now. Well, you know, how are you ever going to enact something like that? What's to keep a normal person from going into a job and saying, you know, I'm a homosexual, and, you know, getting moved to the head of the line? I mean, there's no way to prove you're a homosexual. I mean, you can obviously prove you're a non-white fairly easily, but how are you going to prove you're a homosexual? I mean, it's just like all of it. It's just wrought with you know, just ripe for corruption and all sorts of unfairness and. So it goes without saying, I'm sure the American government will pursue it, as I said before, at breakneck speed. But I want to talk about, the Native Americans, the American Indians, as I call them, but the Native Americans, as they're also known as. As a kid, I loved reading about, the different Indian tribes of America. I thought it was fascinating. I thought it was interesting. But again, to celebrate, you know, American Indian culture as if it was something great and wonderful is folly. You know, I'm here in Hot Springs, and I love Hot Springs, and I was sitting at the hotel lobby this morning, and we were eating breakfast, and as with many hotels, they have a little kiosk with brochures. And I'm going to tell you about a brochure that I found right after this. Stay tuned. We gotta get out of this place, girl.
a better life for me.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the final segment of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio Program. What a fast 3 hours this always is. Thank you for sharing it with me, and thank you for allowing me to share it with you, even as I host tonight from my vacation spot here today in Hot Springs. And as I was saying, and I was downstairs in the lobby earlier, and I saw this brochure. I got to pick a quick bone about this glorification of the American Indian, or the Native American, as they call them. They had this brochure for some Indian mounds that are here in the area, and I was reading through it. And like I said, you know, I loved reading about this stuff as a kid. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was cool. But, you know, I'm reading about it, and it's talking about the history of the American Indians in this region, and it talked about how before the Europeans came, that there was thriving civilizations here in America of quote unquote Native American tribes, and they were very advanced, and they utilized trade routes, and so on and so forth, and it was just so great here. And then the Europeans came and massacred them, blah blah blah. Well, number one, let's be real about a few things. While the Europeans were building cathedrals and cities and all of these things that were modern technology for the age, the greatest accomplishment that American Indians were able to do was, build dirt mounds. That's just a fact. And there were no thriving civilizations. I mean, you're talking about people who worshipped wolves and owls and rabbits, and they didn't have common language. They were squatters. I mean, they truly were. Before the Europeans came here and settled this wilderness, you had, thousands of different tribes here, hundreds of different tribes, I should say, all grand totaled equaling no more than a few hundred thousand American Indians. A few hundred thousand American Indians squatting on this land, in hundreds of different tribes, and not one of them built anything of lasting significance. And like I said, it's cool to learn about that stuff. They were very interesting for what they were, but they wouldn't have been so relatively easily conquered if they were as advanced as the history books say they are. And this has nothing to do with the show tonight, but it's just, we're reading about how their, historical achievements are, government mandated to be taught in public schools, and now along with, the blacks and the homosexuals and whatever. Well, I mean, that's all well and good to learn about them. What about, the glory of European and Western civilization? How about teaching a class on the glory of that instead of what was evil about it? That would be a class that I would send, that I would like to go to. Anyway, do we have Peter Stanton on the line? Peter, are you there? Apparently not. Pete was supposed to have called in. Maybe Pete will still call in. We have a few minutes left tonight. If he does, just put him on the line and tell him to start talking, and then I'll stop. But what else is going on here? What else is going on? Ron Paul, I did mention this earlier tonight. The end is near for Dr. No. Ron Paul, I hate to see him go. We don't agree with him on everything, but certainly he is ahead of the curve as far as Congress is concerned. Austin, Texas Associated Press reports that United States Representative Ron Paul said last Tuesday he will concentrate on running for president and will not seek re-election to Congress, ending a 24-year career as one of the more colorful members of the House of Representatives. 75-year-old Republican said he will not serve out his term through December 2012, that he will serve out his term through December 2012, whether his presidential campaign is successful or not. He told the AP that he has been criticized for running for Congress in the past while seeking the presidency. Paul said the growing support for his 2012 presidential bid convinced him he should not divide his energies. He won a straw poll at the Republican Leadership Conference held in New Orleans last month. So basically, there you have it. And why is he called Dr. No? That's, well, because, you know, that's his nickname, Dr. No, because he votes no on just about everything, because, frankly, everything that comes up for a vote is bad for the country. So he votes no a lot. So he's Dr. No. And, of course, he was a doctor before he got into politics, you know, medical doctor. But so, you know, there you have it. Whether he wins or loses the presidency in 2012, of course, Ron Paul is running for president right now in the Republican primary. He will not seek re-election to Congress, so he will either be president in 2012 or he will be in retirement. He will not be in Congress again after his term expires. So pretty interesting there. I told you earlier that so-called conservative counties in California are looking to separate from their liberal neighbors and form the state of South California. Not to be confused with South Carolina, but South California would be the 51st state. Obviously, this is probably more propaganda than something that has some momentum. At least, you know, some local officials are enthusiastic about it. Not so the Democratic governor of California, who said it's ridiculous and that if you want to live in a Republican state with right-wing laws, then there's a place called Arizona, you know, because, you know, right-wing laws, you know, they want to secure the border. God forbid that. God forbid you secure the borders, okay? Yeah, that's right-wing stuff right there. Anyway, pretty interesting story. You can read more about it, of course, at the Political cesspool.org. Secession is always a romantic notion for me. And of course, after that, as I said, after that article we just talked about how homosexual history is now a mandated class in California public schools, can you really blame anyone for wanting to secede from California? But good luck with that, boys. I hope it works out better for you than it did for us here, 1861 to 1865. Final story of the night, and this is getting beyond ridiculous at this point. How many times have I reported on stories of non-white crime and violence at Chuck E. Cheese? Well, the answer, of course, too many times to remember. And I'm just reporting on the instances that I've stumbled across. God only knows how many have slipped past me, but we have a recap for some of our previous stories of black violence at Chuck E. Cheese at thepoliticalcesspool.org. We've got some videos for you there. It's all there. And then I could have linked to many more examples, but you get the idea. But another celebration of diversity has taken place at a Chuck E. Cheese location in Corpus Christi last week. The man say, and I'm reading now from the story, let me start over here. Live radio and all, you know, we don't get a take two. We just got to keep rolling. The man, police say, admitted to groping multiple boys at several locations around town, was indicted this week. Police say that Daryl Stevens admitted to touching a 7-year-old boy at a Chuck E. Cheese on May 18th in Corpus Christi, Texas. He pulled the boy into a bathroom stall, grabbed his arms and wrists to keep the boy from leaving until the boy later escaped from under the stall. And that's where he was, of course, sexually molested. As you know, well, let's just say Daryl Stevens ain't white. And just another example of diversity in Chuck E. Cheese. They don't mix. How long can Chuck E. Cheese survive this kind of negative publicity, though, without mentioning the big elephant in the room, which is race? I mean, you can't have story after story in the national media about fights and near riots regularly breaking out at your chain of restaurants, especially one that's geared towards parents with kids, and expect to stay in business. According to a recent Wall Street Journal article, they've already put armed security at some of their stores, and the problems still persist. There's nothing they can do, really. Not much they can do, thanks to the civil rights books on the laws, especially the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which effectively outlawed free enterprise in America. If this were a free country, if America were a free country, Chuck E. Cheese restaurants would be free to admit whoever they wanted and ban who they didn't, for whatever reasons. Say what you want about restaurants in the segregated South. They didn't have problems like this with boys getting molested in the bathrooms. And anyone who points out that Chuck E. Cheese wouldn't have these problems if they didn't allow certain people into their restaurants is, of course, a racist bigot and a Nazi and so on and so forth. Just as anyone who points out that the World Trade Center would still be standing if we had never allowed immigration is a racist bigot and a Nazi, so on and so forth. You know, we've decided, this country has decided for us, I should say, that the trade-offs in freedom and safety are worth it for the glorious benefits of living in a diverse wonderland. So we'd better just get used to it. But I wouldn't be buying stock in Chuck E. Cheese if I were you. Ladies and gentlemen, you can read more about that. Watch the videos, look at the pictures. Well, not, you know, we don't have pictures of the, you know, horrific molestation, but, you know, we got some stuff there for you about what's going on at Chuck E. Cheese. Check it out to end on that at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Again, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank our team in Utah at Liberty News Radio. I want to thank our crew at home in Memphis at 1380. For all the staff and crew, Bill Rowland, Keith Alexander, Winston Smith, and Eddie Miller, I'm James Edwards. Thanks again to our guest, Alana Mercer, tonight. Buy our book, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be back home next week and doing the show from the studio in Memphis. Until then, God bless you. See you then. I'm James Edwards, signing off.
Go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.